I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Rugby League Digest. I'm Michael Adams, not here with Andrew Paskin, nor, as you may have guessed from the title, is this the concluding part of our English chapter of the Super League War. That is just not quite ready for release this week. Been working very hard at it, and I'm really excited about what we're going to put out, but it's not quite ready. That's going to be out next week. To tide you over and to celebrate my Dragons taking on Andy's Raiders this weekend, although I don't know if celebrate's the right word, the way our two teams are going, what we thought we'd do to give you something to keep you going until you get to our concluding episode of the English chapter next week is just something that we did on Patreon a few weeks ago. I picked my favourite ever Dragons team. Andy did the same for the Raiders. So I thought, you know, it's timely given our teams are playing each other, but also just gives you a little bit of a glimpse into some of the stuff that we're doing on Patreon. So we're doing some bonus episodes every month. We're doing a monthly recap of the modern game. We've got some cool interviews up on there, our old history corners, as well as just little bonus content like this. So I had a really great time going through some of my favourite Dragons players. Andy did the same for his. So I hope you enjoy it and would love to hear what you think about our teams. Just before I throw to that, just want to give you one final reminder about our RLD catch-up taking place on Saturday, July 3rd at Bankwest Stadium for Manly vs Canterbury, followed by drinks afterwards at a nearby Parramatta hotel. I will probably close off the tickets Friday next week just to give us time to finalise everything. So, yeah, $20 will get you into the game, and then we're just going to have a great afternoon and evening celebrating footy and having some good chats. So please come along. If you were thinking about getting a ticket but haven't done so yet, please do so. So if you just go to our Facebook or Twitter page, you can find a link to the Eventbrite event, or just Google Eventbrite RLD Manly vs Canterbury. You should find it pretty easily. But with that, just wanted to thank you all again. Sorry we couldn't get part three of Chapeltown Road out for you this week, but it is it's a really good one. I'm really happy about what we've got planned for that. So stay tuned for that next week. And with that, I'm going to throw to myself, giving you my best ever Dragons team, followed by Andy's Raiders. So speak to you soon. So anyone who's listened to this week's chapter will know that it got a bit emotional for me as a Dragons fan talking about Gordon Tallis and everything that happened throughout 1996. So I thought maybe I could tie it all together. And while I'm thinking about the Dragons, I thought I'd put together my favourite ever Dragons team. So this is only players I got to see. So obviously we're excluding a whole host of greats that were before my time. So I'm just going to go through position by position and talk about some of my favourite Dragons. So I hope this is interesting to some of you. You know, if there's any Dragons fans, great. But even non-Dragons fans, I hope I can say something interesting about some of these players. So I might as well just get straight into it. And for each position, I'm going to also talk about some players who didn't make the cut and why I've chosen who I did. So we'll start with fullback. So my memory goes back to Mick Potter. He was the first Dragons fullback I have an active memory of. I can't say I remember his career well enough to seriously mount a case to put him in my team, but I just wanted to say, like, what an interesting career. Two Dally M's at two different clubs, won it with the Bulldogs in his second year, then breaks his leg in 86, struggles for form after that, signs with the Dragons, then goes on to win a second Dally M with us. Like, pretty crazy. And then you know, retiring at the end of 93, going on to be a foundation player with the Western Reds. So even though I didn't get to see a whole lot of Mick Potter, I've always had a lot of respect for his career and, you know, the esteem he's held. So not making my list. A player who I loved, but I couldn't really mount a case for him being the Dragons fullback, is Luke Patton. When he came out, you know, started Illawarra, obviously I met up with him in a big way when you know, the merger happened, and I got to see him in his second or third year, I guess it would have been, in 99. Just really loved him. He was such a good player, and then I think it was 2000, he kind of went off the boil and got dropped at the Dragons, spent much of that year in reserve grade before moving across to the Dogs, and of course going on to have a great career there. So I always thought we gave up a bit too soon on Patton, but, you know, who knows? Maybe, like, he needed the change to become the player he'd go on to become. So really loved watching Luke Patton play, but I couldn't seriously mount a case for him as a Dragons fullback. The same's true for different reasons with Darius Boyd. Anyone in that premiership team will always have a fond place in my heart, but he just never felt like a Dragon. And I mean, that's the way it played out with him, you know, following Wayne everywhere he went. Seeing him on stage winning the Clive Churchill in 2010, it was well deserved. I mean, that was a game without any real standouts, and he was, you know, as close to the best on ground as any. So I couldn't really begrudge it, but it just, even at the time, it just felt like he wasn't one of us, seeing him give that speech. And that's not having a go at him or saying he didn't try. Like, he was brilliant for the Dragons. He, you know, I don't know if we win that premiership without him. He was such an integral part of our attack that year and for the 3 years he was there. But it just always felt like he was just going to be there for a short time. So I have a lot of respect for Darius Boyd. Couldn't really consider him as my Dragons fullback. But Darius's teammate and halfback in that grand final victory is my choice for my favourite Dragons fullback, Ben Hornby. I just absolutely loved Ben Hornby, and especially at fullback. It was kind of a sacrifice, him moving to halfback, and no one's going to argue that Ben Hornby was a great halfback. He was effective, he got the job done, but he needed a Jamie Soward there, you know, being the true half in that attack, and Ben Hornby was, you know, kind of directing traffic. So at halfback, he was like a solid player, not outstanding. But I think because of that, because that's how he spent the back half of his career, people may forget how good he was at fullback. And, you know, maybe he didn't have the flash of some of the other players at the time, you know, the likes of Anthony Minicello. But he was a very creative player. He was safe as, so dependable. And above anything else, like, I knew how much he loved the team and the club. Like, it just permeated off him. So, ultimate clubman, really classy player. It's well deserved that he has, you know, multiple origins, because he was definitely of that class, and just in putting the team first, he probably sacrificed some of his own personal success. But I'm sure among any Dragons fan, he's revered, because I loved him. I loved the player he was, and I just love it. It's a rare and special thing when you know that a player you're following cares about the club as much as you do. And Ben Hornby definitely had that. So he's my fullback. Love Ben Hornby. In terms of wingers, I've got to give a honourable mention to Ricky Walford, childhood hero. Another one that just makes everyone feel good. You know, you can't hear the name Ricky Walford without feeling good. Very classy winger, long career at the Dragons, and deservedly known as a Dragons legend. I would quite happily have him in my team if it weren't for the class of the two players I picked. But love Ricky Walford. Jamie Ainscough had a great career at the Dragons. I thought he was a great buy for us from Newcastle, and really became a key part of that team in the next few years. And probably the player who came closest to making it was Jason Nightingale, who I could see, like, you know, non-Dragons fans just being a bit blah about Jason Nightingale. You know, he wasn't a flashy player. He wasn't the fastest, but he was such an effective winger. And like Ben Hornby, so dependable, so safe. You know, anytime he filled in at fullback, he did a brilliant job. Two tries in the 2010 grand final. Another player who loved the club, and you could just feel the effort radiating off him. So I love Jason Nightingale. Would have loved to be able to find a place for him in this team, but the two wingers, I think you can tell from who I haven't mentioned that it's a pretty easy choice of Brett Morris and Nathan Blacklock. So Brett Morris, it's bittersweet seeing him have this, you know, prolonged career at the Roosters and, you know, proving what a great winger he was. It's funny, a couple of years ago when, or a few years ago now, when we were doing our Hall of Fame segments, it'd make me think about current players and which current players would make a Hall. And I thought about Brett Morris. This is when he was at the Dogs. And I was thinking, has he done enough? I'm not sure. Like, he was such a good winger. And I think in that 2010 era, in the Premiership era, he was without question the best winger in the world. Super finisher, could score from anywhere. And just, I don't think there was anyone in his class at that time. But then, you know, he goes to the Bulldogs and, you know, he's playing with a middling team there, has middling success. He kind of like comes back in and out of the Origin team, but it seemed like his days as a top winger were done. And I was thinking, well, has he done enough? And now here we are a couple of years later, another premiership at the Roosters. And I don't think there's any question that Brett Morris, you know, isn't a Hall of Famer. Like, he's all but guaranteed at this point. And again, it just hurts to see him doing it for the Roosters, especially because of the fact that it's the same way that his dad, Steve Slippery Morris, went out. And in the very first episode of our show, Andy and I, just to introduce us to any potential listeners, just went back and forth with some players that had some meaning to us. And Slippery Morris was the first player I chose. He was my first footballing hero. But when I say that, I was five when he left the Dragons. So I don't have any active memory of watching him play for the Dragons. And in fact, the only active memory I do have of him was seeing him in a Roosters jersey. So it was definitely the Sydney Football Stadium. So it must have been either 88 or 89, which was his last year. And I remember seeing that and just feeling like confused, like it just didn't seem right. So it's kind of tragic that's my only footballing memory of Slippery Morris. And then to see the same thing happening to his sons, albeit I think Brett and Josh are probably offering a bit more at this point in their careers than Steve had left at the Roosters. And when Brett was looking for a new club a couple of years ago, when it was clear he and Josh were being moved on from the Bulldogs, there was talk of him going to the Roosters. And at the time I thought, well, we don't really need him back at the Dragons, but I'll take him just to stop him finishing his career at the Roosters. And now I'm thinking, geez, we could use Brett Morris. So I say bittersweet, but there is a sweetness there. It's great to see him and Josh, you know, doing so well, you know, defying age, defying the odds to play a key role in that team. And I feel for Josh never getting that premiership. I don't think the Roosters are going to do it this year, but if they did, I'd kind of be okay with it, just to see Josh get that premiership and to see Brett get his third. So, you know, Brett Morris, one of my wingers. Nathan Blacklock, his wing partner, one of my all-time favourite Dragons. And just the joy you felt watching Nathan Blacklock. He is beloved by any Dragons fan. That era, there's some heartbreak there, obviously. It maybe didn't finish the way... It just sucks the way it ended. Like, I don't think there's any way around it. The way he was treated by New South Wales selectors is absolutely disgraceful. And there's a pattern there that I hope now we are moving past. And some of the selections in recent years makes me think that that's the case. But, you know, we don't like to get too political on this show, but I think there is absolutely zero doubt that race played a part in Blacklock's continued omission. I remember hearing at the time all the all the talk about him not being able to handle the pressure. There were questions about his defense, which is maybe more reasonable, but at the same time, I don't know how you could overlook a player doing what he was doing. Like, you know, winger of the year, top try scorer 3 years in a row. As we said in one of our Hall of Fame segments, the first player since Benny Waring for South in the 20s to do that, and, you know, the only one to do it since. Like, that's a rare feat, and it just sucks the way we never got to see his career play out the way it should have. But, you know, that's all by the by. As a Dragons fan, I just look back and remember Nathan Blacklock on the wing, and it just gives me a smile on my face. Yeah, so one of my absolute favourite players. We'll move on to the centres. This was a pretty easy choice for me, the two I picked. I just want to talk about one I couldn't pick, which was Paul McGregor. Paul Mary McGregor. Not going to talk about his coaching here, but I will say I loved him at the Steelers. I loved him playing for New South Wales and Australia. He was a great player. And as much as I've tried to embrace Steelers history, I just couldn't really consider him because his best years were at the Steelers. Exactly the same is true for Rod Wishart, another player I loved. But it was great seeing them in 99 and you know, Mary went on to 01 or 02 whenever he finished up. It was great having him in that team. It was really cool to, you know, have these two blokes that I always liked watching suddenly be in my team. And so a lot of respect for Mary and for Wishy, but I couldn't really consider them because this is a St. George and then St. George Illawarra combined team. I'm not really factoring in Steelers careers. So Mary aside, Mark Coyne was a classy player who could have gotten the nod. He really overachieved. You know, I don't think he was the best player, the most gifted player, the fastest center. You know, he wasn't a great center, but he wrung every ounce out of his talent and had a great career as a result of it. So a lot of respect for Coyne. His center partner in the mid-90s, Graham Bradley, the Penguin, another player I had a lot of time for, loved watching the Penguin, but, you know, he's not in the class of the two centers I've picked, which are Matt Cooper and Mark Gasnier. So lethal center combination, you know, throughout the 2000s. Matt Cooper, beautiful man. At the back end of his career, he became known more as a defensive center, but I thought he had a lot of flash early on. And yeah, really dependable. Loved having him in the team. Gaz, there's a bit of frustration with Gaz. Like, I don't think we got the most out of him. You know, I mentioned Mark Coyne, you know, wringing every ounce of talent he had into his career. Gaznia, like, as with a few players in this team, in this era, there's just a bit of frustration that we never got the player he could have been. Like, he was devastating when he was on, but it was kind of like, you know what, like one match in three or you know, these short bursts where he was the best center in the world, and then suddenly he wasn't. It just seemed his heart was never in it as much as, you know, his natural talent. That being said, like, he was great. He was a brilliant player, such a weapon in attack. One of my fondest memories of Gaznia actually doesn't have to do with him on field. So it was 2010, the year we won the premiership. I was working in a bottle shop at the time and finished my shift. The guy I was working with said, you know, oh, do you want to go get a beer? So I was like, yep, no worries. So we go to the pub and we're sitting down. We're just talking about the footy. And I'm, you know, he was talking about how he was a Bulldogs fan. He's going, you know, like, oh, yeah, no, you guys are looking pretty good. And then I mentioned, oh, yeah, and Gasny is coming back, so that's going to help. And he hadn't heard the news yet, and he just said, Gasny is coming back. Oh, it's over. You're going to win the comp. And I kind of felt that too, and just to hear that, I was just like, yeah, it's on. And, you know, I won't say that the rest of that season was stress-free, because at that point, having never seen a Dragons premiership, I just wanted it so bad. That, you know, it was 71 minutes into the grand final before I could relax and, you know, soak in the fact that we were finally going to win the competition. But certainly having him back just instilled me with confidence, and you could see what it did for the team. If you watch some of the docos that have been produced about that side in recent years. You know, I think it was Dean Young talking about Wayne Bennett calling him and some of the other senior players in and saying, "Oh, we got a chance to get Gaz back. What do you reckon?" And their eyes just lighting up and saying, yeah, we can use him. So, yeah, brilliant player. Ultimately, a kind of frustrating career, but, you know, I think he also carried that name heavily. It seemed like it was a burden for him, and, you know, I can understand that. Moving to 5'8", and want to shout out a couple of honourable mentions in Jamie Soward, who, widely derided, really good player. Like Darius Boyd, we don't win that 2010 grand final without him. And, you know, I could tell he cared about the club, and, you know, you see him back as a kicking coach now, so it's good to see him back in the fold. He kind of, you know, lost his way for a while after Bennett left, but very fond memories of Jamie Soward. Gareth Widdop, I really liked having him in the team. I think I said about it, you know, when we were doing the week-to-week show, he was a good player, he just wasn't a winner, you know, but he was wholehearted and, you know, had a lot of class. I really like watching him play. Short of my team, I wanted to talk about Trent Barrett. I never considered Barrett for my team just because, kind of like Gaznia, there's such a lot of frustration there about Barrett. And partly it's like, I don't think it's all his fault. I think it's just that era, the early 21st century Dragons, just such a frustrating period in my life as a fan. You know, we had this stacked team of predominantly Illawarra juniors all coming through at the same time, and, you know, and Barrett, the poster boy for the club and the face of the NRL. And I always thought I'd see him play for New South Wales and he'd just kill it. He'd look so good. And apart from like the first couple of years, like I think 99, he looked really good at times. I just feel we never got to see much of that at the Dragons. And he's just a frustrating representative of a frustrating period in Dragons history. And again, like, so much of that is not his fault. Like, I think if he was playing at the Dragons throughout the 90s, or maybe in the last 10 years, I would probably have warmed to him a lot more. So I don't know what it is about Barrett, but I just look back on that era with frustration. So rightly or wrongly, he gets damned. He gets tarred with that brush, and he's out of my team. His halves partner for a time is my choice for 5'8", and that's Anthony Mundine, who was so good. Like, he was just really good. He was his own worst enemy. You know, I wish he stayed in the game. For all the success he had as a boxer, I don't think he's half the boxer as he was as a footballer. The second half against Cronulla in the 1999 prelim, I was at Stadium Australia that day, and it is one of my favourite memories of a football fan, as a football fan, watching him carve up the Sharks that afternoon. It was masterful. It was majestic. And it showed everything he could be. And, you know, we all know how the season ended, not the way anyone would have wanted. I just wish he stuck around. You know, he was like very forthright, obviously, in talking about how he was the best 5'8 in the world and he should have been playing for New South Wales and on and on and on. The old legs daily, all that sort of stuff, which was just dumb. And it was just never going to endear him to anyone. It wasn't going to endear him to New South Wales selectors. It wasn't going to endear him to rival players. And I think, like, maybe he would have got that rep career if he'd have stuck around. You know, like, he'd seen off Laurie Daly. You know, Kevin Walters was gone. Brad Fittler was coming to the end of his run as a rep player. And, you know, Fittler could have quite easily slotted back to lock to accommodate Chock. Or maybe it'd be Mundine coming off the bench as he did in, I think he played one origin. It could have been more. I can't quite remember. But yeah, a fantastic player, his own worst enemy. But he was just, when he was at his best, he was a joy to watch. So Anthony Mundine is my all-time 5'8". Halfback was kind of a tough one. My dad always jokes that, you know, we haven't had a good halfback since Billy Smith. And when you look at the, you know, the 45 years since Smith retired, it's kind of hard to pick one who you could say, yep, he was definitely our guy. And I think back to the early 2000s, you had, you know, Luke Branigan, then Brett Furman, Matthew Head. These guys were all going to be the guy. And, you know, I just pinned so much hope on these guys. You know, I heard, oh, there's a big rap on Furman. Apparently he's a gun. He's the guy. That doesn't work. Matt Head, like, I actually think he could have been the guy. Like, he had some injury problems, which killed his career, basically. But I thought he had a lot of class. And, you know, there's a lot of what-ifs about Matt Head's career. Another what-if is Matt Rodwell, who, you know, had a great career at Newcastle until Joey forced him out, went to the Western Reds, came to the Dragons, I think 98 was his first year with us, and he looked great. It kind of looked like he was the guy, you know, he was going to be our halfback, you know, for the next few years at least. The merger happens, we've got Barrett coming in, we've got Mundine, there's just no room for Matt Rodwell. He goes off to Penrith, finishes his career. So we never really got to see the best of him at the Dragons, but really unlucky career, Matt Rodwell. I think in a different if he'd have started at a different team or if he'd have started at Newcastle and Andrew Johns went somewhere else, you could see him having like a really solid first grade career. So that's another what if. I really struggle with these two. So my first runner up, I guess, is Noel Goldthorpe, who he probably would have been my choice if he'd have stayed at the Dragons. And he didn't really want to leave. So basically the failed East merger made him think about his future and he decided to go to Super League and leave the Dragons. I think if he'd have stayed at the Dragons and we got him, you know, so that would mean that Rodwell didn't come to the Dragons and maybe Goldthorpe would have been squeezed out when the merger happened, but it still would have been another couple of years for Goldthorpe to press his claims as, you know, the Dragons halfback of the 90s, which, I mean, he was. He was there the longest. He did the most. Played, was he in 92 and 93? Well, anyway, he played multiple grand finals with the Dragons. And he was a good solid halfback, you know. He wasn't, you know, anywhere near the class of the top halfbacks at the time. I mean, it's lucky for him that he got that New South Wales jersey and has that little piece of, I can't call it origin folklore, but interstate folklore with his extra time field goal in the Tri-Series final in 97. So that's a really nice moment for Goldthorpe to have. And, like, it's a nice reward for someone who was always there. And as I said, not half the players, you know, Ricky Stewart, probably not a quarter of the player is Ricky Stewart, but dependable, did a great job for the Dragons for the time he was there, really likes Noel Goldthorpe. And so he was so close. This may be controversial, but I'm going with Ben Hunt as my choice. Another player who was unfairly derided. There's some mental fragility there. Like that 2015 grand final, I think, set his career back so far, and it's been a six-year struggle to overcome that. But he has so much talent, and all the talk about, you know, oh, he should be playing at hooker for the Dragons, or he should be coming off the bench as a utility. No, he is clearly the best choice halfback at the club at the moment, and he's so rarely the problem. You know, it's understandable that the halfback or the, you know, the million-dollar guy is going to be the scapegoat. But, you know, it's not his fault. If you look at how he plays in Origin, he's always stepped up. He's a classy player. Before he came to the Dragons, that 2015 season at the Broncos, him and Milford together was magical. I loved, you know, Friday Night Broncos, of course. It was in that era. And it was appointment viewing for me to watch Hunt and Milford together. They were great that season. And so I was really excited when he signed with the Dragons. And you can say we overpaid for him. And yeah, we did. But what are you going to do? We needed a halfback. We'd gone after every half on the market for 2 or 3 years. We had to pay overs. That first season when, you know, the first 6 or 8 weeks, the Dragons looked unstoppable, it looked like, you know, it was worth every penny. And the thing about that move is, signed for 6 years or five, I can't remember, 5 or 6 years, whatever it was, if he wins one premiership in that time, well, it was worth it, you know, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But I think it was worth the gamble. And I still think for the next 2 or 3 years, he can be our guy. And you know, who knows? The team's in better shape than it was. So we'll see how that plays out. But Ben Hunt, he kind of needs someone to hold his hand and tell him he believes in him. So I'm telling you that, Ben, I believe in you. We'll move on to the front row. A few 90s blokes I'll shout out. Tony Up the Middle Priddle. Loved having him in the team. Jason Stevens, I very well may be talking about as one of my players, except for the fact that, you know, he left to go to the Sharks so early. So we got a lot of hype about Stevens at the Dragons and a couple of good years out of him. But then he was off and, you know, obviously went on to great success playing for New South Wales and Australia from the Sharks. So I couldn't really consider him. I came really close to putting Colin Ward in, which may be a surprise, but I loved Colin Ward. And, you know, he was nowhere near a rep jersey. I mean, I think he might have played for City a couple of times, actually. But, you know, he was never going to be an outstanding player, but he put in every week. He did a great job for us. You always felt good having Colin Ward in the team. So he came very close to making the squad, along with Chris Leichvoll, you know, an Illawarra bloke who in the early years of the merger was a great prop for us. And I'd put him, you know, a little bit below Colin Ward, but loved having him in the team. I went close to putting James Graham in because I loved having him in the club. But ultimately, I think St. Helens and Canterbury got his best years. So couldn't seriously consider James Graham in the team as much as I loved him as a player. So the two I've gone for are current prop Paul Vaughan, who, you know, I think he's kind of on the decline. I don't think the last couple of years he's been as strong as he was for the first 2 or 3 years he was at the Dragons. But he gets a Guernsey because those first 2 or 3 years were magical. He was really good. But it also tells you that maybe like there's been a lack of really top-notch front-row talent. Like, you know, you talk about the 90s, you've got blokes like Luke Felch and Troy Stone who were, you know, builders. Oh, you know, these are the two guys. They're going to be there and never quite had it. You know, Troy Stone went off to Super League in Canterbury. Hunter, he played for, I'm pretty sure, but his career never really panned out. Luke Felch, same thing. Never became the player that some people were talking about him becoming. So Paul Vaughan's partner in the front row is Luke Bailey, who, brilliant player. I think we got his best years and then the Titans got, you know, 2 or 3 more good years out of him before he fell into that, you know, veteran kind of class and not quite as effective. But yeah, Luke Bailey was great. You will notice the omission of his prop partner at the Dragons for many years, Jason Riles, who the most frustrating player I've ever had the misfortune to watch. Like, yeah, he was like talented. He was a good prop, but my God, it was like the drop balls, the dumb penalties. I couldn't cop Riles. And all the talk now about him being this super coach in waiting, I'm like, Jason Riles, like, what are you talking about? Like, is he going to instruct his team to, you know, hold down on the fifth tackle, give away a cheap penalty and, you know, let the opposition march down the field 7 times a game? Jason Riles, like, what are you talking about? Like, possibly the dumbest footballer I've ever seen in a Dragons jersey. That's not to be disparaging of the man, but not my kind of player. So no Jason Riles in my squad. I'll move on to hooker. Again, not much of an argument for me, this position. So I'll shout out Cam McInnes, who I've loved having in the team the last few years. A lot of disgust at the fact that we let him go to the Sharks. I'm kind of okay with it, you know? Like, I feel he's got maybe 2 years left as a top line hooker. But, you know, if we miss out on the tail of his prime, so another club can pay him for that and a couple of years of post prime, you can live with it. It's the game we're in, right? So I've loved having him at the club. Wish him well at Cronulla. I'm not, you know, necking myself over the fact that he's going. My runner-up was Mark Piggy Riddell, who, you know, crowd favourite, cult hero. was a really super player at the Dragons. I think we definitely got the best out of him. You know, had some good years at Para, but definitely Dragons Piggy was the premier Piggy. A very smart footballer who got the most out of his talent, and you know, another one who just puts a smile on people's face. So I know I definitely think about the Piggy era at the Dragons with a lot of fondness, despite all the frustrations with the rest of that team that I've discussed. So my hooker then is Nathan Brown, who I think like had kind of an unlucky career. Obviously, the way it ended, you know, like a career finished too soon. But even through the late 90s, it's funny doing the Super League war and looking at the way Nathan Brown was being talked about. He was being talked about as a possible, you know, New South Wales and Australian player, like particularly in the split competition era and the, you know, the rep ban era. So to go from that to like not even get a country jersey, you know, he was always overlooked for Cherry Mesher, who, no disrespect to Cherry Mesher, I thought Brownie was a far better player. And, you know, I'd take Brownie over Aaron Raper, who was getting those rep jerseys as well. For whatever reason, I guess it happens sometimes, like there's maybe a 2 or 3 year window where a player might get picked. For various reasons, he doesn't. And then suddenly the game moves on. And a player who in another era might have, you know, played 5 or 10 origins suddenly doesn't get a country jersey. It's just the way it is. But, you know, he was a great team man. You know, despite nearly leaving us for the Sharks during Super League, he stayed and was the real heartbeat of that team in the 90s. Obviously, it was a mistake, you know, giving him that coaching job so soon. And this is another, I think in our last Patreon episode, Andy mentioned Phil Gould's, you know, pronouncements of Trent Barrett as a, you know, superstar coach, and I forget the other coach he mentioned. But Brownie was another one who was anointed by Gus. I think he was an assistant in Gus's origin team. Of course, that's, you know, the famous walkers on. That was Brownie as an assistant in the origin team. I think that maybe, you know, made people think he was ready when clearly he wasn't, you know. Do a couple more years of apprenticeship or go to another club, you know, like seeing it now with Ben Hornby at the Rabbitohs. Like, I love that, you know. If he's going to come back and coach the Dragons one day, I'd much rather cut his teeth somewhere else, you know. Get the job at, you know, the Tigers in 2 years or wherever it might be. Let another club work out whether you can coach or not. And then you can come back to the Dragons a returning hero. You know, I think I'm all for the Dragons never hiring a coach who has played for the Dragons again until someone can prove me wrong. I mean, not since Harry Barth has that tactic worked out. Barth leaves. Roy Masters comes in, takes us to a grand final. We get Craig Young, disaster. Brian Smith comes in, takes us to 2 grand finals. He goes. Rod Reddy comes in. A disaster for very different reasons, but I think if he'd have stayed and actually coached the Dragons, it would have been a disaster on field as well. Reddy is replaced by David Waite, takes us to grand finals. They made a boneheaded decision to can Waite and give Andrew Farrer the sole coaching job. Farrer, of course, Steelers old boy. Disaster. Farrer goes, Brownie comes in. I'm not going to say disaster because there were some good years. He had some good success. But, I mean, that is the best, that is the most talented Dragons team of my lifetime, and we couldn't get it done. So I'm calling it a disaster. I go back, disaster. Wayne Bennett comes in, premiership. Steve Price, former Dragons player, disaster. Mary, catastrophe. Now Anthony Griffin comes in. I mean, we're only 6 games into it, so, you know, I could be proven wrong on this, but it's already looking a lot better than it was, so... No more club legends coaching the Dragons, please. This is veered wildly off subject. Just wanted to say, yep, Brownie is in my team, but he's not my coach. So let's move on to the second row. The dynamic duo of the 90s, Scott Goulet and David Barnhill. Barnhill in particular, fantastic player. Really loved watching him. Scott Goulet, I'm surprised he only played like a handful of origins. I think it was only, you know, 3 origins in 94, and that was his rep career done. He seemed like a guy that was around the rep scene for longer, but both of them not quite there. Still a bit dirty on them going to the Roosters, so I'm ruling them out on those grounds. Another player from the mid-90s that I couldn't realistically put in, but Kevin Campion, me and Andy have spoken about our admiration for Campion over and over. We both love him. He's in the, he might not be in the Rugby League Hall of Fame, but he is a first ballot RLD Hall of Famer. We love Kevin Campion. He's one of those guys. He only played 1 year for the Dragons, that year in 96 where we made it to the grand final. But I was surprised, you know, a few years ago, I think it was when we were maybe putting a Hall of Fame shortlist together, that I went back and actually realized that he only played 1 year at the Dragons, because it just seemed like he was around longer. Like he was just such a presence that 1 year that, you know, I loved having him in that team. I wish we got a few more years out of him. So I couldn't realistically put him in my best ever Dragons team, but a very special place in my heart for Kevin Campion. One player just short is Ben Cray, who I think unfairly maligned, that, you know, in running away from the fight in Origin and being tarred with, like, that's just so dumb. Like, you know, maybe he wasn't the toughest player, but, you know, very classy second rower, almost in the Menzies mold of being, you know, more of that center second rower kind of thing. Very strong runner of the ball. He could hit a hole like no one else and, you know, key part of that premiership team. So I love Ben Cray. Just a bit short of my 17. And the two second rowers I've gone for is one, a recent Dragon in Tyson Frizzell, who, you know, I said it on our Patreon app last week. I think we moved him on at the right time, or, you know, he chose to move on. But super player, really, really great second rower at his peak. So love Tyson Frizzell. I love even more Bo Scott, who is my other second rower. I really believe that you cannot win a premiership without a player like Bo Scott in your team. Like, just that heart and soul, tough as anything, that bodyguard enforcer type role. And you could say, like, he was, you know, when he slotted in at center, he was, you know, a defensive center. And yeah, he wasn't like a flashy player. You definitely want him in the back row over at center. But I mean, the fact that he could even be chosen there, play like rep games there, just shows you what a versatile, classy player he was. And yeah, just magical 2010, having him in second row, you know, Gasnier and Cooper in the centers. It was just a great time, and I love Bo Scott. And that leads me to my lock, who is one of my very favorite players, Sean Timmins. You know, you talk about versatility. He could fill in at 5/8 center, you know, in the back row, but I think lock was his best position, and he's everything I want out of a lock. Like, just a really strong player, had ball skills. We all know he could kick a field goal. And, you know, due to injury, we never got the Sean Timmins career we could have had, but the career we got, like, was pretty damn impressive, and more impressive than, you know, it should have been given those injuries. But he just stepped up to any level he was required to. One of the few not frustrating parts of that era of Dragons was watching Sean Timmins come through. The start of the Steelers in like 93 or 94. You forget how early he started, but he was great. Love Sean Timmins. So yeah, very little debate about him at lock. Neglected to mention my shortlist, which included Jeremy Smith, who was, love Jeremy Smith. So good having him in that team. Again, it's kind of like the Darius Boyd thing, where he never really felt like a true Dragon. But yeah, like, really, really great player. Wayne Bartram, very fond memories of Wayne Bartram, who was really talented. Like, I think people forget he was like a really talented player. Much better lock than he was a hooker. But I go back to the Bo Scott thing. The fact that you can do both and, you know, play rep games in a position you don't play for your club, and having that being such a key position as hooker, tells you how classy he was. That try against Canberra in the 96 semi will always be one of my favourite footballing memories. So, yep, love Wayne Bartram. And Brad McKay, who, you know, had a brilliant reputation. I think, like, just because of when he left, like, you know, after 94, like, I'm kind of a bit too young to really remember him so clearly. Like, I think if he'd stayed at the Dragons for you know, 2 or 3 years after that, or if he stayed all the way through, I mean, it's funny to see him finish his career at the Dragons, you know, coming from the Illawarra end of the merger. But yeah, I probably just didn't see enough to consider him. And that leads to my bench. And the first player on my bench is probably the best player in this list, and that is Gordon Tallis. So it may be a bit cheeky picking Gordon Tallis because he's such a Broncos legend, but I had to find a place for him. And obviously, like, if I was picking a second rower just on talent, he's miles ahead of both Scott and Tyson Frizzell. But I thought it was only fitting, because I'm picking my Dragons team, to make Tallis my super sub. And it was, you know, I touched on this in the episode, but it was just such a magical time in that kind of 94 era where Tallis was the guy, and it was like, Tallis is on. Yeah, just something really special, something you don't get too often as a footy fan. But I'll say it again, we got the best out of Gordon Tallis, so not really. So yeah, Gordon Tallis, what a player. The rest of my bench, it's a real heart bench. So Lance Thompson, rest in peace. But like, it was so cool to me being a high school student and seeing a picture of him in the paper in his high school uniform about to, you know, make his debut. Like, I remember that that newspaper article. And when you're around the same age as the guy and you see that, you're automatically just like, oh, wow, this is my guy. And to see him just, like, put his heart in, like, he loved the Dragons. And it was sad the way it ended with him having to go to the Sharks because he was such a great clubman. And, you know, maybe he never had the career that we thought he was going to have when he was making that debut. I think any time you're debuting as a, you know, 17, 18-year-old, there's going to be a big rap and an expectation that you're going to go on and become this great player. And in the end, he became a very solid club player. You know, he kind of reached his ceiling and that was it. But just as I said, this bench is all about heart. It's all about people who will bleed for the Dragons, and he's certainly that. This next bloke got very close to making my run-on squad, which was Joel Thompson. It might be a surprise to some, but he was so good for us at the Dragons. A great clubman, seems like a genuinely like good person, someone who does a lot of work for the community and someone very passionate about making a difference. On field, though, I remember, you know, him and Frizzell came in at about the same time. I remember when there was all this talk about Frizzell potentially, you know, making his rep debut. I kind of thought, why aren't they talking about Thompson? Thompson's just as good. The first couple of years at the Dragons, like, I thought he was easily the equal of Frizzell. And, you know, like Frizzell, we probably moved him on at the right time. He managed to get a nice little deal at Manly to finish out his career, or his Australian career at least. And, you know, and we could plan for the future. So I didn't begrudge him that. And I think we got his best years out of him, but just loved having him in the club. He was just a real asset on and off field. And finally, Dean Young, who I guess is my, you know, bench utility. I always thought he was a much better lock or back rower than a hooker, but just that's what you want. I said it with Ben Hornby. You want a player at your club who you know cares as much as you do about the club. I don't begrudge players for, you know, being a bit mercenary or treating their careers as a business, because it is. That's the business they're in. And if they can get a deal elsewhere or, you know, do what's best for them, so be it. But when you see a player who just, you know, and Dean Young grew up with the club, like he's never known anything else and all he wanted to do was play for that club. And as good as he was as a player, I think the thing that really puts him over the line for me is that moment him and Craig Young both in tears embracing on the field. Oh man, I'm almost tearing up thinking about it now. But just, I think for any Dragons fan, I think about like me and my dad. You know, my dad had the experience of watching Bath Babes and seeing that great team of the late 70s win competitions, you know, spearheaded by Craig Young. You know, I wasn't around for all of that, but I got to see Dean Young being like kind of like the last survivor of, or one of the last survivors of that team from, you know, a few years before that never got the job done. And to know what he'd gone through personally with his injuries, to see what the club had gone through in the 29 years since Craig Young had helped the Dragons win a premiership. I think any Dragons fan who has that family connection, any like son or daughter of a Dragons fan that got to experience that together, like it's just the absolute best about football, seeing that. So that moment is forever etched on my brain. And who knows when I'm going to see a Dragons Premiership again. It might be in 20 years. And if that's the case, but I get to share that moment with my son and my daughter, well, you know, I could handle that drought. So, yeah, so I'll always have a particular fondness for Dean Young. So he rounds out my 17. I'm just going to quickly announce my coach, which is David Waite. What an effort to take the Dragons to the grand final in 1996. I think we botched the merger mightily. Like, I think if we'd have retained Waite as coach, punted Farah right at the start, I think it was clear that David Waite was the better coach, that was the way to go. I think with the roster we had, if we'd have stayed with David Waite, I can see that era panning out differently. I don't know why he never had the first grade coaching career that I think he could have had. It you know, it's just one of those things, I guess. But he was a fantastic coach, so he gets the nod in my team, and that's all I have to say, I guess. So apologies to any non-Dragons fans. I hope I've managed to keep this interesting for you. Would love to know what you think about my team. If you are a Dragons fan, let me know your team, and yeah, we'll have to get Andy to do the same with the Raiders. But thanks for sticking with me through this, if you made it this far. Thanks again for supporting us through the Patreon and with the RLD in general. It's a really magical thing for Andy and us to get to do this. So thank you again, and I will speak to you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
See you soon.
This is a solo Patreon app for all our loyal Patreon crew. I'm going to follow up on Michael Adams's Magnificent Dragons Best 17 episode and do my Canberra Raiders one. I had such a good time listening to that as a fan of the game. Usually, I wouldn't let it start Michael on Dragons talk because he could talk at glass-eyed sleep, but it was absolutely fascinating to hear what certain players meant to him and, you know, and the reasons why. And when I went through my team, I actually felt guilty in that my childhood was in the actual superstar days of the Raiders, and poor Michael's, you know, struggling to come up with a half, you know. But, you know, it was really fascinating stuff hearing the whys and the memories of which players got in which position. So I'm going to go through my Canberra Raiders team now. I'd like to thank you all on behalf of myself and Michael as well, just for your generosity in contributing to the Patreon crew. We're building it up, and we're doing some cool stuff coming forward. So I think next week we're going to have a book interview with Mel Hoffman on the inside story of the WAG, so look out for that. But yeah, I'll get stuck into the Raiders now, and I'm going to offer my thoughts on, you know, why some players were left out, some made it, and pretty much it's going to be a lot of 94 players, because that's my ultimate happiness in rugby league, the 94 dream team for the Raiders. But there's some guys there that helped us out during the lean years. There's some guys that were just ultimate club men that, and just guys that I love personally that, you know, I put in the team as well. So it's not just the entire dream team. But again, I feel guilty compared to the Dragons of that era. It's like being born in 1956 for the Dragons, you know, like you'd have your choice of the guns. But before we get started, I want to acknowledge a couple of the players from the foundation era of the club, which I never got to see, so I can't put them in the team, but Dave Grant, Jay Hoffman, Chris O'Sullivan, I saw him, Ashley Gilbert. These guys here built the club up, you know, copying floggings in the first few years until Mal arrived with the cavalry with Wayne Bennett. These guys deserve some praise for, you know, going through the lean years, and a lot of true Raiders fans respect that. Anyway, starting off, no surprises to listeners of the show, Brett Mullins is my fullback. Absolutely love Brett Mullins, the most naturally beautiful runner, a gazelle, poetry in motion, performed most effectively by Neil Sedaka was about him, I feel. But yeah, I was there for the, I've told this story 15 times, and I'll tell it another 100 before the month's out probably, but I was there at the Four Tries versus Newcastle game, snuck down to sit with the Canberra players, past the lax security guards with a mate from school, and you know, witness that amazing, timeless night of football. Those four tries, the two length of the field ones, it was just magic. And he didn't have a long career. Michael and I have discussed that at length on the Hall of Fames. You know, he was a shining bright star that burnt out quickly, but for while he was there, he was amazing. Two guys that deserve a shout out more than anything are Gary Belcher and Clinton Schafosky. Now, Belcher, I'm leaving a guy out that played 16 tests, won two grand finals with us, was all class, but he was just a bit before my total fandom. So Mullins is my man. But I mean, Badge, what an absolute gun player, 16 origins, you know, mustache to die for, Gary Worth-esque mustache. And yeah, to leave him out, it's a bit of a disgrace, but I want to give him a mention. And Clinton Schafosky, he actually kept us afloat during the lean years, the Aussie male years. You have to deal with that jersey. The vomiting pre-game, looking in the mirror, would have been enough to turn you off. And he turned up every week and was all class, kicking goals. And it was, yeah, the guys that come through the lean years, I want to give them some love as well, because he actually kept the club afloat there for a while. On the wing was my all-time favourite player as a kid, pre-Ricky Stewart, the guy that got me into the Canberra Raiders in the first place, John Chicka Ferguson. Yeah, everyone remembers 89, but just going through his whole career online, and the guy didn't debut until he was 25 in the city. I mean, he was 36 when he retired after the grand final in 1990. I mean, it's insane how fast and elusive he was. But yeah, he was just a joy to watch. And all the stories about him sleeping and having a ciggy in the change rooms, they don't impress me. What impresses me is the just absolute class on the field. He was a gun finisher and so elusive and so quick. Love you, Chicka. The other wing, I had to come down to two guys, and it was Nagus and Andruku. And I've selected Nagus, and I'm going to go through the reasons why, because they're both neck and neck. But some honourable mentions there. Sean Hoppy was a great winger for us before going across the pond. Love Sean. And a few unsung heroes, Matthew Wood and Paul Martin from the early 90s. They were really great finishers, and they were always too unsung a hero for mine. I really loved them, and on the end of Stewart and Daly, they were pretty lethal. I still remember Nandruku's debut 93 when he was bamboozling guys like they've never seen, like an alien had come, and he was just turning them inside out with his twinkle toes. And I remember trying to like, you know, copy that in touch footy at school and stuff like that. And he got 22 tries that first year. He's incredible. And then he sort of become more of a power player as well, moving forward. But he didn't stay with us that long. He went up to North Queensland during Super League, and Nagus was a one-club guy. Injuries got him towards the end, but he's another guy that Neil Sedaka was singing about. This guy was poetry in motion. God, when he was in full flight, there was nothing like it, and I can still remember 1994 Grand Final, him streaking down the field with those long strides. He was like a Ferrari. I love Ken Nagus, and honourable mention to Noah. In the centres, one guy who picks himself is the world's best public speaker, Mal Meninga. What can you say about Mal that hasn't been said? The guy is an immortal. The discussion about him not being an immortal actually irritates me. He, he's done it all. He had the aura. There would be no Canberra Raiders dynasty if Mal didn't come down from Queensland, come back from the broken arms, all the tropes. I mean, the guy is just an amazing. The 94 Kangaroo Tour, I know it's not Raiders specific, but to finish out that way, perfect career, you know, dominated Queensland, dominated Sydney, dominated Origin, dominated for Australia, won the comps for Canberra, put us on the map, and yeah, he's the greatest ever Raider, hands down. The other guy, probably not a surprise to Raiders fans, but probably a surprise to non-Raiders fans, I'd guess, Jared Croker. To me, ultimate club man. Somehow he's always overlooked for rep footy due to some perceived size issue, or it can't be toughness because he's one of the toughest guys ever. I mean, this guy has just been class for us and is the key to the resurgence of the Raiders for mine, him and Josh Papali'i. But Yeah, you couldn't ask for anything more. And like, when I see him and Sticky's relationship, you know he's a soldier because, you know, Sticky just wants, he doesn't want 100%, he wants your soul. And that's what Jared Kroger's given the club. And, you know, he's a percentage player more than he is a super strike weapon, but he's still a good strike weapon too. So, you know, Jack Whiten's a guy you could throw out there. But for mine, natural talent versus tenacity, I'd rather have the tenacious Jared Kroger in the other center position next to Mal. Honorable mention, another unsung hero from the 90s, David Boyle. Tough as nails, very solid, good hitter and good finisher. Love David Boyle. I was actually buoyed to read on the Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson and Co's site, Ultimate League Resource, that Morgan Boyle, the Titans and now Manly player, is his son. I didn't realize that, which is really cool. No surprises that he's also a tough player. 5'8" is going to be no surprise to anybody out there. The king of the bread pranks on Brad Clyde, Laurie Daly. If Mel's the ultimate raider, this bloke would do a pretty good job as a stand-in if Mel was off sick, because when I think Canberra Raiders' success and spirit, I think Loz, ultimate class player, you know, hampered by injury. He always came back from that somehow, though, and it was just ultimate class. Even on one leg, he'd dominate games. And you know, he's a big moment player, a clutch player. Love him off the field, too. And no one else was going to challenge him for the sixth spot. But I want to mention a couple of players. Chris O'Sullivan, we mentioned, as a foundation player. He paved the way for Loz. But my favorite player around 2009 in the whole competition was Terry Campese. And he's a great raider. And very underrated for mine. When he was playing for Australia, I think it was 09, he had the ball on a string, and he's the most like Ricky Stewart in the halves I'd seen since Ricky Stewart. And he debuted for the Blues and made like 42 tackles or something, didn't miss one, and got dropped, which I thought was a mistake. And another guy that got hampered by injuries towards the end, but God, he was a great player and so fun to watch. Honourable mention to Campo. Number seven is between Trevor Shadell and Steve Stone. I've gone with Ricky Stewart, though. My all-time favourite player. Probably the biggest prick in the game, personality-wise. Makes Warren Ryan look like Shirley Temple. Apart from that, yeah, just changed the way the game was played. From 88 onwards, I remember sort of watching as a kid and just watching how their passing and kicking changed with him and just being blown away. And by the time 93 came around, when he was the best player in the world, pre-ankle break, him and Laurie were throwing like two passes across the entire field and no one was blinking an eye. It was just like totally normal. And yeah, just loved him as a player and tried to emulate all his show and go and chip kick moves in the playground and emulated his personality on many occasions, which was probably a negative. Up to the props now. Now, the props were very difficult because there's been some really great props for the Canberra Raiders. And for me, it's always going to be Ponga and Lomax as the, you know, the 94 props that really stole my heart, so to speak. But there were so many more guys that played longer and probably did more for the club. But I mean, I'm going to pick Ponga just because he was the less mad of the two. Uncompromising, rock hard, Kevin Campion-esque, I would say, the quiet, hard man, and could go off and hit you high, but he was not as loose as John Lomax with his John Belushi looks and, you know, head-high swinging techniques. Yeah, so out of those two, they only played, you know, 100-odd games for us, but every one of those games, people knew they were up against it, so I'm going to pick Quentin and honourable mention to John Lomax. For the other prop, it's got to be Glenn Lazarus. In my view, the greatest prop of all time. Did it in three different clubs. Didn't spend a long time with us, but he led the way for those early comps. And I'll never forget that from Glenn Lazarus. Yeah, beautiful contribution and untouchable as a prop. Honourable mentions, Sam Bacco, Steve Jackson, these guys, you know, everyone remembers the Steve Jackson try. Bacco was a character and a hard man and probably a bit before my time when I was still a young kid. Brent Todd, now, he played four grand finals for us. I didn't know that. 89, 90, 91, and 87. Unbelievable. And apparently he didn't score a point in his whole career for the Raiders. He ended up going to the Gold Coast, ostensibly for the following reasons.
Well, mainly the Gold Coast, it's because the Shields have been looking, I want to fuck them all.
Aside from that, you know, genuine hard man. So Brent Todd, big shout out to him for his efforts for the Raiders. Second row is another sort of tough one. There's been a lot of great back rowers at the Raiders. I've picked David Ferner, again, from that era that I love, 94 and onwards. And he went on to be a leader of the club post the 94 grand final and Kangaroo Tour. The guy was a goal-kicking forward ahead of his time. The step, the understated toughness. Didn't realize he was a, you know, hardcore boxer until later on. But, yeah, uncompromising but also classy. He had the speed of a center and the footwork of a center in the second rower's body, and that was ahead of its time as well. Great player, Ferner. Real club man. Loved him. Definite pick for me. David Barnhill is a guy I want to shout out. I know Mick mentioned him in his Dragons team, and God, that guy was underrated. For us, he was great, and for every other club he went to, he was great. And, you know, I remember the Origins when he was just so tough and uncompromising. I think he was hurt by his appearance. Like, he looked a bit frail, really. But he was, you know, really, really hard and great forward. So I wish I could put Bunhill on the side. But I've gone for a player that only spent 2 years with us, John Bateman. Now, this is a bit of recency bias probably, but I thought it over for a couple of days just to make sure it wasn't that, because the impact this bloke had on the Canberra resurgence to the grand final and what have you was just seismic. And he's everything I love in a player, you know, Northern England head. Small, ridiculously hard, and just a guy that lifts everyone around him. And the impact he had for those 2 years, I think it's going to go down in history. I wish he stayed with us. Another recency bias shout out goes to Elliot Whitehead, who's become just a class back rower and a great club man. I think he's going to end up probably one of the great Raiders. Brett Hetherington, another guy who was as raw as they come in the early 90s and become a really good player for us. And I love watching him play. Kind of reminded me of John Daly, his appearance, actually. Fitter John Daly. Really enjoy Brett Hetherington. Hard as nails. Locke goes to the recipient of the legendary Laurie Daly bread prank, Brad Clyde. I feel like 89 was the only year we got peak Clyde, maybe 94 as well, with all the injuries. But hooly dooly, this guy changed the game as far as back row play goes. Energizer bunny. His first hit up of the game was as hard as his last hit up of the game. Always back in defense first, taking the tough hit ups, not the running downhill ones. And yeah, could break the line, just all class and deceptively big and deceptively strong. Honourable mention to legendary clubman Sean Fensom, who played well above his weight and donated his bloody brain to concussions for the club. And every Raiders fan respects Fensom. Was robbed of orange jerseys a few times in my personal view. Again, with the Jared Croker, is he too small debate, which Queensland never seemed to fucking have. Honourable mention to clubman from the 80s and 90s, Dean Lance, part of the early premierships. And with Mal, one of the guys that put us on the right track in the mid-80s. And he's a great headgear exponent. On the bench, now, I've got three that probably won't be a surprise and one that will be. First up, Josh Papali, or Papalihi. He's always been a gun, let's face it. He's just a beast of a forward in the Andrew Fifita and his prime mold, you know. Just fat, strong, impossible to tackle, rampaging. Almost in the Talis mold as well in his peak. He went from, you know, the lows of calling the cops on himself to prove a point to, you know, leading us to the grand final, being unstoppable, you know, origin success, being unstoppable at that level. Yeah, just a gun and couldn't leave him out of the side. Arguably in the top three club men, he's going to be in the number 15 jersey as the ultimate utility, Jason Croker. And what do you say about this guy? He's played every position, I believe. I think maybe not halfback, but even then, I think he probably played that at some point. Started as a winger, for God's sakes, and ended up to being one of the strongest back rowers and utility guys. Everyone knows the story of him holding himself up horizontally on the goalpost by his arms. I mean, that's insane. And It seems like he got too big towards the end, actually. Like, he was just a barrel of muscle. But God, he played a record amount of games for us and filled in everywhere and did an admirable job leading us through the lean years. And love him as a player and as a club man. This next guy is another utility forward, front end, second row, and back for that matter, I suppose, is Ruben Wiki. Now, we didn't get him in the legendary. He was turning legend at the end of his Raiders career, but he became the legend in the Warriors as an elder statesman. But when he started as a centre, I think it was 93, and I still remember being at my nan's house and hearing his name read on the radio and thinking, Ruben, what sort of bloody name's that? And like, Wiki, that's weird. And then seeing him and thinking, this guy's an Adonis, right? And he was great from the start. He kept axing guys in the first game. And he's the owner of the all-time greatest rugby league hit for mine, the Adrian Lamb tackle, where Adrian Lamb gets hit so hard that he bounces back up, almost standing up. Yeah, so we had him as the center, and then he moved into the back row, and then eventually the front row, and just became... I love seeing guys that are dominant in two positions, and I suppose he was more dominant as a forward, but he was a great center as well, and a gentleman and a tough guy and a community leader. Ruben Wiki, loved the guy. The name seems normal to me now, Ruben. Now, the final guy I'm going to pick here, he didn't play that many games for us, 4 or 5 years, but I consider this guy the ultimate rugby league player and the ultimate team guy and soldier, and that's Kurt Baptiste. And I know Sticky loved him, which says to me that he knows how to follow an order. And bringing up Jack Whiten again, a guy who's got all the talent in the world, and, you know, for the first 100 games of his career would spill the ball twice a game or give away a dumb penalty twice a game and just sort of not be that effective at times. Kurt Baptiste got every ounce and more out of his talent and was effective in every single minute he played for us. Never complained that he was a bench guy, a super sub. Never complained when he was 18th man 400 times. And everything that a Raider stands for and everything that Sticky stands for, in my view, is Kurt Baptiste, and I wish we never let him go. And the coach has got to go to the amazing Tim Sheens. Love Tim Sheens as a coach. People say it's pretty easy coaching a team of thoroughbreds with no salary crap restrictions, and they're probably right. But he was really cool. He looked cool. His blue Raiders V-neck on the sideline, and he's Mr. Cool vibe. And I thought he was a great coach, and no one else really challenging him for that role. So yeah, that's my team, and some of the great memories for me, mainly from the early to mid 90s. I mean, that was just superstar central. 94 grand final day, I spoke about that at length. It was the last grand final with my nan, my mum, and my auntie. I had all the streamers up, and it was just a magical day as a 14-year-old, and I'll never forget that. And we should share that Paul Osborne, actually, for that cameo. I mean, the guy's not good at a supermarket checkout, but he's that cameo makes up for any sins. Yeah, 94, that team is the ultimate, and my team's full of those blokes. Yeah, and this has been such a fun exercise for me, so nostalgic, and just reminds you how much these guys put into the clubs, you know, and... we're going to do a few more of these. We've been speaking to Michael about doing a few more of these, maybe getting some input from Patreon crew members. And there's certain clubmen out there in the Michael Adams Dragons level of delusion. So we'll get in touch with you, I think, and do those clubs. But I love Michael's episode. That was beautiful, especially the personal stories and the reasoning for the team. And mine was so much easier. Nonetheless, I had a great time doing it, and I hope you enjoyed it too. Please comment on any changes you'd make to my Raiders team. Remember, it's our lifetime, so I started watching it in like 87 as a 7-year-old. So, any changes you want to put in there, I'd be interested to hear them. Thank you for listening, and thank you for following on the Patreon, and we hope to have some excellent stuff coming out soon. Yeah, any thoughts you've got, drop us a line as usual. Social media, we've got Facebook, Twitter, the email, which Michael looks after the email, and of course the Patreon now. So, post on the wall, send us DMs, whatever. We're both on there all the time, enjoying the interactions immensely. Again, thank you so much for joining up. Toodaloo.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.